this thing on, because it's getting ready to be on.
All right, guys, welcome to Bell Ringer. Today I have President of Insight Consulting, Ben Rand. We talk about the history and future of advanced manufacturing in Buffalo, Niagara, and we talk about the role that Insight plays in the local economy, not just in manufacturing, but in other startups and a few other realms. And we get into Ben's past, his resume. I did my research. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and I'll see you at the outro. Enjoy, guys. All right, Ben, thank you very much for coming on the podcast, and welcome to Bell Ringer.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
All right, so first, let's start with an overview of Insight and tell the listeners what you guys do.
Sure. Well, there are really two halves to our business. You can think of us as a regular consulting company. Half of the work that we do is helping existing manufacturers, particularly small and medium-sized manufacturers in Western New York, to become more competitive and to grow and succeed. The other half of our business is helping startup companies, particularly technology companies, to succeed in Western New York as well. We kind of think of it as helping our existing industrial base and helping those companies of the future that'll be part of our future industrial base. What's unusual about us is we're a nonprofit, so we get some federal and state funding to help us with our mission to help manufacturing and startup companies.
And you started your career in consulting with Deloitte, right?
Yes, long ago, coming out of business school, I worked with Deloitte & Touche in the days of business process reengineering.
Right, and then you went away from consulting for a while and went into industry, and now back in nonprofit consulting. How does your time, it was over a decade, right, in industry, how does that inform your second stint in consulting?
Right. You're very kind. It was a couple of decades.
So,
I went from Deloitte to line management roles in manufacturing companies. U.S. Filter was a Fortune 500 company, and I actually came to Buffalo to run CIFAR Filtration, which was part of a privately held Swiss company. We hired Insight Consulting, actually, when I was at CIFAR, and Insight did a bunch of work for us. And being an ex-consultant myself, I thought I recognized not only a quality organization, but a very cost-effective organization. And so we were excited to do the consulting work we did with Insight. And when their longtime president, Bob Martin, was retiring, they reached out and I was basically recruited to come in and try and replace Bob. Not that anyone could have replaced him. He did a tremendous job over 25 years. But that's how I found my way back into consulting. I think what you're getting at, though, is how does that experience working in industry inform the work that we do as consultants? And I like to tell a lot of our clients that I've sat in their seat before, that I probably made every mistake in the book in my days running manufacturing businesses. And I think that sort of uniquely qualifies me to talk about ways that we might be able to help improve their businesses and help them reach the goals and objectives that they're after.
How does a nonprofit differ your mission than maybe a more standard consulting firm?
Well, I think consultants, if you asked a lot of people, a consultant is kind of like a salesperson, right? You don't want to see them coming because they have a reputation for borrowing your watch and telling you what time it is. This idea that, we want to keep the revenue flowing, we want to do project after project. As a nonprofit, we don't really have that same motive. Our interest is really the success of the company, and that's actually what we're measured against. The federal folks who send some of that subsidy money our way actually survey every one of our clients after we work with them on a project. And they don't just ask, was Ben Rand a nice guy to work with? They want to know, can you quantify the new sales that you received as a result of this project? Have you hired any new people as a result of this project? Did you see any cost savings? Did you make any investment? And they quantify that every quarter. And it's been 17 years now worth of data, not only for Insight, but for all of our sister organizations around the country. This is a national network. So we've got a very, very good handle on the dollars of actual impact that we've had. And that's what we're measured against. So we want the company to succeed. That helps us succeed.
Right. And you guys are coming up on $2.5 billion in economic impact in Western New York, right?
That's right.
So how do you guys measure that impact? You talked about how you have to report that information. How is that number actually found?
Well, it's interesting because we actually don't report it. The Department of Commerce is the organization in the U.S. government that owns the Manufacturing Extension Partnership Program, through which we receive some of these monies. So it is the Department of Commerce who hires independent third-party survey companies, and they go directly to our clients. They don't ask us what the impact was. They go to our clients and they ask them what was the impact of working with Insight. So we're very proud of the fact that these aren't our estimates or our guesses or, you know, our finger in the air. This is really about what clients believe we did for them. You know, that is something we're proud of.
Having that much impact in Western New York and Buffalo, how much is the region or the character of the region ingrained in your company?
Oh boy, everybody in our company is, you know, really invested in Western New York. These are folks who have great skill sets. They could work in manufacturing companies here or, frankly, anywhere in the country. The kind of work that I used to do at Deloitte and Touche, these guys could easily be doing. But they choose to do it here in Western New York because they have a real commitment to the area. They want to see Western New York succeed. Almost all of them have been born and raised in the area, and they have that commitment that you see that is so unique, I think, to the Buffalo area.
Right. And Buffalo has such a rich manufacturing history, and to be a part of the people that are helping it succeed kind of in a second wave, you know, it must invigorate everybody on the staff and motivate everybody, right?
I think that's absolutely true. You know, we have a great legacy of manufacturing here, and that's part of the reason why I think there are so many hidden gems in this area. You know, we actually have a blog, and one of the recurring features on our blog is what we call Made in Western New York. And it's stories about famous products, famous companies that originated in this area that I think have, in some cases, been forgotten. I mean, Buffalo is where the artificial sponge that you use in your kitchen and in your bathrooms and things was first developed, and it's still the biggest sponge plant in the world, the 3M plant. You've got, you know, the Crescent Wrench that was originally developed down in Jamestown, which is fascinating. In fact, we just wrote a piece about the P-59, which was the first American jet aircraft, which was actually built on the top floor of the Trimain building in a top secret project in 1942, 75 years ago today.
Wow.
So it's really cool stuff. And if you look at the Trimain building now, I mean, you've got folks like post-processing, who's breaking new ground in processing additive manufactured products. So that legacy of innovation is continuing even today in the area. And that's what we like to point out, that connection from our past to our present.
Right. And there's kind of this consensus between some people, manufacturing's dead, and something we like to say is manufacturing's changing. In what ways do you think it is changing?
I think it is changing, but it's always changed. That's the nature of manufacturing, from the days when people would hand make products, to today when, you know, we're using all kinds of technologies and machinery to manufacture products. And that's one aspect of manufacturing that's continuing to evolve rapidly. The technical changes that are taking place today are, you know, rightly, I think, called revolutionary. Things like automation, additive manufacturing, digital manufacturing, the Internet of Things are all huge technologies that are on the cusp of really revolutionizing aspects of manufacturing. So part of what we're trying to do is get people up to speed on what does that mean for them and how can they take advantage of those opportunities.
And with manufacturing changing so much and like robotics becomes a, you know, a new phase and a new wave, how do you balance, you know, the future of robotics while still maintaining like the legacy of manufacturing and advancing companies but keeping them comfortable with their past?
Sure. Well, I think like anything else, we have to evolve to succeed over time, right? As the environment changes, you have to change with it. And we certainly see cases of companies that have maybe fallen behind and need to catch up. But there are other companies who are continually investing and are even ahead of the curve. I think one of the worries I have is this tendency that some people have to see technology as a threat, to see it as a challenge to, say, employment. And, you know, it's interesting because I think technology raises other opportunities, and that's really the thing that we should be emphasizing. It was interesting. I was listening to a TED Talk the other day, and the number of tellers in banks actually increased after the introduction of the ATM. Very interesting fact that surprised me. As it turned out, banks realized that they could put a lot of smaller branches out there with ATM machines and a teller, and the nature of what the tellers did simply evolved, and they started doing more human things, talking to clients, building relationships, selling different kinds of products that the banks had to offer, as opposed to, you know, just taking deposits and handling withdrawals. So I think technology opens as many opportunities, perhaps more than it closes. And that's something to keep in mind, because for us, employment is one of the key things that we look at. But I think the healthier the company is, the better the employment for that company is. So we're looking for companies to maximize their health so they can maximize their employment.
And what can you say about cobotics and that as a resource for employers rather than a replacement for employees?
Well, it's interesting because cobots are a class of robots that are designed to work very closely with humans without the kind of safety concerns traditionally associated with robots. If you go into a lot of plants that have big industrial robots, they're caged off. You can't get close to them because, you know, you might get injured. A cobot is designed to work right next to a human operator. So it's interesting because they can often take some of the less interesting, more repetitive, perhaps more ergonomically dangerous tasks, and they can handle those so that the operator can focus on higher value-added activities. So while you're screwing five or six screws into, say, a tablet, the operator can be testing it to make sure the operating system is doing what it should do and that the thing is functioning the way it should function. And so I think there's a great potential for cobots going forward. In fact, that's something we've helped Bach with, if you've seen some of those videos.
And have you guys had any involvement with any of the Buffalo Billion projects or Buffalo Manufacturing Works coming in and really, you know, diversifying the economy, but also with a huge focus on advanced manufacturing still?
Yeah, we're very involved in all those things. We were originally involved in the regional council, and that morphed into the Buffalo Billion. So we were involved in some of the discussions around what we wanted to do with advanced manufacturing, which led to Buffalo Manufacturing Works. So we worked with the guys from EWI who were originally consulting to Buffalo on this new institute, and then they were invited to propose. And we're one of the four partners in that that Buffalo Manufacturing Works. So it's EWI who does all the cool applied technology stuff. We do the process improvement pieces, the business pieces. Another partner is the World Trade Center, which helps with export opportunities for companies, which can often be a key to growth. And the University of Buffalo is underpinning it all with some of their resources and technology. So it's pretty exciting. And you mentioned the Workforce Training Center. That's the latest piece of the Buffalo Billion to be put in place. That's about to be stood up on Northland. And I think it's going to answer a tremendous question that we have in the area about the resources to support some of the growth that we're seeing. So that's going to be a very important undertaking. And we've worked with the Buffalo Niagara Manufacturing Alliance and some of the other partners there to do whatever we can to help with that process. And we may, in fact, ourselves end up relocating to Northland to be next to Buffalo Manufacturing Works and the Workforce Training Center.
And how important do you think an organization like Buffalo Manufacturing Works, first of all, can you explain it for our listeners? And then second of all, how can people in advanced manufacturing utilize that tool.
Yeah. Well, the thing that really excites me about Buffalo Manufacturing Works, and particularly about the people at EWI, is that we have literally world-class experts, some of the smartest people in the world in the technology areas that they're focused on. So for Buffalo Manufacturing Works, that's automation, including things like robotics, it's additive manufacturing, and it's materials characterization. So they're looking at, you know, how do you ensure structural integrity of certain materials or certain constructs. These folks are right in our backyard. They're an amazing resource for small and medium-sized manufacturers throughout our area who are wise enough to take advantage. And fundamentally, these are manufacturing technologies that can help you make your products better, faster, cheaper, and give you a competitive advantage, even on an international basis, in the areas where you choose to compete. So it's really exciting because so much of what we've done in economic development typically has been about bringing in, you know, a brand new company, attracting people to our area. But a lot of these small and mid-sized manufacturers have been here for years, decades, fighting the good fight, employing lots of people, paying lots of taxes, and they're really the backbone of our economy. So something like Buffalo Manufacturing Works is really for them, and it's really to help them get to that next level of competitiveness, to make them successful, to help them grow, to reward them for all those years of being here and being part of the program and part of what kept Buffalo going.
How do you balance those companies that have that rich history and, like you said, have been fighting the good fight, I like that, with a lot of the attraction and some of the newer companies coming in? How do you reconcile the two?
Don't get me wrong. I think it's tremendous that we're bringing new companies into the area. And thank goodness for Invest Buffalo Niagara and the great work you guys do to help us attract folks like Solar City and so many of the other companies that have come into our area. For me, it's all about that rich mix and diversity. And while we love the companies that are here and that have been here and have that great legacy, I love the brand new startup companies too, the companies that might be, you know, a big part of our future and we don't even know it yet. And companies who come in from outside our area, you know, to me, that's a great vote of confidence in Buffalo Niagara. Those are folks who theoretically could relocate or locate anywhere they wanted, but they chose to come here because they see in our community the same things that we do, and they want to be part of that. So the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. We talked a lot about advanced manufacturing, but like you said, you guys play a larger role in the local economy with attraction or startup businesses. Talk about some of those roles that you guys do play.
Sure. Well, when it comes to startup businesses, our Jack McGowan is probably one of the best known people in right. town. So Jack essentially runs the Western New York Venture Association. He vets a lot of the startups that are looking to present to the Venture Association, which includes potential investors and Buffalo Angels. There's also, in fact, a Buffalo Angel Fund, a formal fund of over $1 million that makes investments. And Jack is essentially running that as well on behalf of the Angels. So he's doing those kinds of things for startups. He's working in SBIR, the Small Business Innovation Research Grants that the federal government makes, and has helped companies access funding through that path. And of course, we've done a lot of work with 43 North, everything from sponsorships to judging to mentoring winners as they've, you know, tried to grow and make progress on their business plans over the course of their time in Buffalo. So it's a really exciting part of the business, and it's a piece that's really taken off. I can't say enough about 43 North and the sort of psychological impact that that has had in our area. My impression as an outsider, I only came to Buffalo about 15 years ago, is that most people in Buffalo used to think a job was something somebody else gave to you. And I think 43 North has really helped people see that a job is something you can create for yourself if you have the right idea and you have the gumption and the aggressiveness to get out there and make it happen. And now with organizations like 43 North, you have viable ways of funding those ideas and viable ways of getting the support and coaching that can help you succeed. So it's really a sea change, I think, for our area in thinking about the nature of jobs and the nature of companies.
So to you, what makes Buffalo Niagara a good destination for a business that is looking to relocate or a startup that wants to completely start anew?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that. As I said, I wasn't originally from Buffalo, although my family roots go back to the 1830s here. But I've lived on the East Coast mostly, New York City, Philadelphia, Boston, New Haven, places like that. And Buffalo has tremendous advantages. It's easy to get around, tremendous resources, cultural resources, sports resources, great weather, great geography. I mean, you can be on the water, you can be in the mountains, you can be biking, you can be doing all kinds of things in this area. And I think if you've grown up in Buffalo, you may not appreciate what you have here. But if you've come from outside, especially a place as crowded as New York or Boston or maybe California or Seattle, it's incredibly appealing. And I think it's not surprising that once companies take a hard look at all the things Buffalo has to offer, that they're blown away and they want to be part of it.
What kind of, I think it's interesting, you being in Buffalo for 15 years, you kind of have an interesting perspective. You've been here in these, you know, last few years for the kind of revitalization. How has that, what is your perspective on how much has changed just in 15 years since you've been here?
Boy, I think a lot has changed. when I first came, I was excited about coming to Buffalo. My father had grown up in North Tonawanda, and his father and his father. I had always known Buffalo growing up and had visited. So I was kind of excited to come back and learn more about my own heritage. But the people who were, if I can say this, most down on Buffalo were a lot of the Buffalonians I talked to. Right. They're like, why are you coming here? We're trying to leave. And I said, boy, you don't know what you have here. I can be at a Sabres game and home in my bed a half an hour later. That could never happen in, Boston, New York, Philadelphia. A, you couldn't get tickets. And B, there's no way. It's only a half an hour, not to mention the crazy traffic and all the other problems. So that was the impression then. And I think we did have a collective chip on our shoulder. And as a result, it was sometimes difficult to get organizations to work together, to get people to pull in the same direction. One of the things you learn, I think, as a successful manager is to give credit to others. And there were so many organizations fighting for credit, it was sometimes difficult to cooperate. That's changed. That's changed radically. And the level of partnering and the level of cooperation and collaboration has increased tremendously. And I think you can see it. The projects that are happening, the things we've been able to do so far, and the things that are still happening are all indicative of how things have improved. It's the old story, I guess. Success has many fathers. And so there's enough credit for everybody to go around, and we just want to see more of it happening.
You mentioned 43 North kind of changing the business psyche of the area, and something that I'm really interested in is morale and economic development, and
right.
Maybe a project that happened that didn't, create that many jobs or really turn the economic tide, but the psyche of the city. What's one or two of those things that you can think of that really tipped the domino?
Yeah, I think 43 North is a great example,
right.
And the work that they've done. Something like Solar City, even though they haven't gone into production yet, the fact that a major company and a big name like an Elon Musk is willing to come to Western New York, commit to Western New York, make that investment. I mean, admittedly, the state's putting a lot of money in, but so is Tesla and Solar City. That's exciting. I think people notice that and say, wow, those guys could go anywhere, but they're coming here. Mm-hmm. What does that say about the area? Maybe we need to reconsider how we're thinking about this. Maybe this really is a cool place to be. And, I think we've had a multitude of those kinds of things happening.
All right. I want to go into our blizzard round so I don't take up too much of your time. We call it a blizzard round, basically a lightning round, but blizzard's my Buffalo twist on it. So just answer as fast as you can.
Will do.
If you were a flavor of ice cream, what would you be?
Oh, boy. I'd be Perry's Cherry Panda Paws.
like that. Panda Paws is my favorite. Maybe not Cherry, but Panda Paws. Text or phone call?
Text.
Bills or Sabres?
Sabres.
Hiking or skiing?
Skiing.
And chicken wings, drumstick or flat?
I'm more a fingers guy.
Chicken fingers,
really. I'll take them as hot as you can make them, but I like to get a little more meat for all that work. So, yeah, I'd have to be a fingers guy.
All right, that's a good answer. Thank you very much for being on the podcast. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Greg. It's been fun.
All right, guys, that was my conversation with Ben Rand, president of Insight Consulting. Super smart guy, great conversation. Hope you guys enjoyed. Thank you, as always, to Marquis Grand for the intro and outro music. And I think that's it. I think that's all I have. Thanks for listening, guys.